Welcome to the Nicholas Detalli Show, where we chat with entrepreneurs, experts, and entertainers to help you live a more fulfilling life and take your business to the next level. Today, we're chatting with Kevin Palmieri. Kevin is the CFO, founder, and co-host of Next Level University, a global top 100 self-improvement podcast with more than 1,200 episodes and 700,000 plus listens in over 140 countries. He's helped grow his podcast into a multi-six-figure business, given hundreds of speeches, trainings, coaching calls, and is a master at helping others implement holistic self-improvement approaches to better their lives. Before we dive into this episode, please leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and share this episode with a friend that you know would benefit from it. Believe it or not, your shares and reviews help me reach out to guests, which will in turn bring you more value on how to live a fulfilling life. Riddle of the week: where do fruits go on vacation? Stay tuned to the end of the episode to find out. That was the intro. Now here is the episode. Hello and welcome. This is the Nicholas Detalli Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Detalli. Today we have a very special guest, Kevin Palmieri. Kevin, how's it going?
It is going very well, Nicholas. I appreciate our little pre-flight conversation, so I'm sure we're going to have a wonderful one here today.
Yeah, I agree. The banter as well. Here's where I want to start. You found yourself, and please correct me if any of these details are not precise, you found yourself traveling a bunch as a construction foreman. You're balling out. You have all the external validation you could ask for. You're shredded. You had a great job paying six figures. And then you did a 100 building job, which was like the largest that your company had ever done before. You had a great looking girlfriend, even rocking the sports car. And these are all goals you were accomplishing. And I've heard you state that at the time you set them based on how you thought they would feel once you had all these things. How good did it feel to be you in that moment, having all those things?
It's interesting because moment to moment, it doesn't feel like anything. It feels like it's normal, right? What you do eventually becomes normal, and then you try to do something greater and you make that normal too. I think I felt really good and I felt successful and I felt like I had accomplished a lot. I assumed me accomplishing all of those things would make me feel really good internally. And that just didn't. So it felt really good in terms of the accomplishment and the ego. It did not feel really good in terms of the belief that that would make my internal feelings better. It would make me more secure. It would make me more confident. It would make me more, you know, less scarce. Yeah. So it felt good, but it didn't heal the things that I was hoping it was going to heal, unfortunately.
Tell me about how was the money management? How did that play into all of this? And I think I've heard you talk about in regards to like hoping to fill something that's there is like a lack of enoughness. If once I have this money, once I have this car, once I have X, then I'll feel enough. But tell me about the money management.
Yeah, I would say all things considered, even though my financial acumen was very low, I managed my money pretty well. I mean, my bills were probably like, I mean, if you just run the numbers, my bills were probably $2,500 to $3,000 a month, which isn't too bad when you're making $100,000. So it was pretty good. I remember, but this is the problem. My awareness was very low. So I might have managed my money, but a lot of it was based on luck and not reverse engineering or skill. I remember texting Alan. Alan is my business partner and co-host. And I said, hey, man, I have an outstanding credit card balance right now of $7,500. Should I pay it off? And he's like, yeah, of course you should pay it off. He said, how much money do you have in the bank? Yeah. And I said, 15,000. He's like, why haven't you paid it off yet? And I said, I don't know. I'm scared. Like, what happens if I don't make any more money? And he's like, dude, pay off the credit card. So I remember, and this was early for me, I paid it off and I screenshotted it because it was Discover Card. And I sent it to Alan and he was like, strong work, man. And that was early before we were really working together. But yeah, I feel like I had pretty decent money management, all things considered, but it definitely had a long, long way to go. And I grew up in a household that didn't have a lot of money. So I believe even at a young age, I would look at people who had a Corvette and a nice house and a lot of money, and I would assume they must be feeling something that I'm not feeling. They must be happy. They must love themselves. They must feel fulfilled. They must feel proud. How could you be insecure and have all those things? So I internalized that, and I think that was my motivation to go find success. And it's a tough awareness when you get quote unquote everything you've ever wanted and nothing changes. And my analogy is always, you have this lock and you're convinced the key is out there somewhere, and you go searching and you get a key and it doesn't work, you get a key and it doesn't work, you get a key and it doesn't work, eventually you get to the point where you say, I know for certain this is the key. I'm going to work my face off to dig it up, and it doesn't work, and it's all this awareness at once, and it's triggering. It's a lot. It's a lot of realization in a very short amount of time.
Oh my goodness. You brought up something that I think is super fascinating. I think this is from the book Psychology of Money, but he talks about how this guy owns a sports car and he drives it to the hotel. And this guy who has a sports car is like, I'm the man because I have the sports car. And he's thinking everybody else thinks that he's the man, but everybody else is thinking, I wonder what it would feel like if I had the sports car. They're not even thinking about him. They're thinking about themselves with the sports car. And I think that's like a great metaphor for how we view most things. It's like, how am I going to be fulfilled by this? But tell me about this level of self-awareness that came crashing upon you. And maybe it's in the breakup era, or is it what happens? When does it come flooding in, like you're saying?
Yeah, so I always say, part of my story, a lot of people hit rock bottom. I found out that rock bottom has a basement. So I went through a pretty difficult breakup when I was 25. My girlfriend and I lived together. We had literally just moved into a new apartment together. And 3 months later, she ended up leaving me because I was so scarce. I was so afraid of my own shadow. I was so insecure that I was trying to hold her back. I was trying to hold her back from accomplishing her goals because I was afraid I was going to be left behind. So she left me, as she should. And it was in that moment where I started to ask myself questions to raise my self-awareness. I don't think I knew what I was doing at the time, but in retrospect, I remember asking myself, Nicholas, who could love this version of Kevin? Who could really love this version of Kevin, this broken, fearful version? And I sat with that for a little bit, but that's when I said, money. I need to go make as much money as humanly possible. So
that's the answer right
there.
That's
the answer. And that didn't work, as we've already discussed. So that next year is the year that I was very financially successful. And I got to the end of the year, and it quite literally happened this way. I had my final pay stub in hand. I opened up my final pay stub. I saw the number. And then I had that moment of, okay, this is cool. This feels really good. And then 5 minutes later, it was like, but now what? Now what has to happen? In that moment, I realized that for most of my life, especially that year, I had lived unconsciously. I was sick of living unconsciously. I was sick of not knowing why. I said, what's the opposite of unconscious? Hyperconscious. And then shortly thereafter, I started a podcast called the Hyperconscious Podcast. So it was in that moment where I realized, I think I've been living my life wrong for the last 26 years. What would it look like for me to live my life correctly? And it was understanding myself at the deepest level, regardless of how uncomfortable, regardless of the pain, regardless of the truths I was going to learn, which I didn't realize how painful they might be. That was really what it was for me. So it's almost, in a way, it wasn't a super painful thing. It was quickly painful, followed by empowering, because now I knew that I can make a new decision if I wanted to. And that's really one of the moments that shifted my life for the better.
That is powerful. And I also kind of want to touch on, there were some suicidal thoughts in this time as well. And I think this comes up because there are times in people's lives where they have suicidal thoughts and they think being dead is the answer, or I'd rather be dead than be alive and continue living how I'm living. And there really is this gray area of like, I don't really have clarity, and they don't have the, what's it? I don't want to say vision or the feeling of like, no, this is a moment of clarification for me to have a new step or a new way of life. They get stuck in those negative kind of thoughts. What was the big difference maker from letting those negative thoughts control you of, I'm not living how I want to live. I've lived the past 25, 26 years of my life wrong. And you know what? Maybe I'm just, that's how it's going to be forever. This is it.
Yeah, it's the podcast. The podcast was the difference maker. So when I started that podcast, and after I opened that check, again, it was the best $100,000 I've ever made because it taught me so much, way more than the money ever could. I remember thinking after that, I'm done with this job. I don't want to travel anymore. I don't want to do this job anymore. I don't care about the money. I'm not working overtime. I will not do any of the things that made me this money. I'm done. Fell in love with the podcast, fell out of love with my job. So this is where things started to take a negative turn. So I start calling out of work. I start leaving job sites early. I start showing up late.
That's bold.
I didn't care. It was like,
yeah.
I know exactly why I work so hard. Now I don't want that result. the approach has to change. It's not logical for me to do the same thing. So that's how it started. And it just kept getting worse and worse. And I didn't care about my work. I was not the good employee that I was at the beginning. And it literally got to the point where I lived in Massachusetts with my buddy. I had a roommate. I lived with him. It was awesome. But I'd have to be in New Jersey to start a job 7 a.m. on Monday morning. I would sleep in my bed from 9 p.m. until midnight in Massachusetts, get up and drive 6 hours straight to the job site. I'd work an 8-hour day, and then I would go to the gym after, because I just couldn't do another night in a hotel room. I was so miserable. It sucked. I hated it. So when I say like I was burning the candle at both ends, I was staying up for 24 hours a couple times a month.
Every day. Yeah. Yeah,
that was pretty routine for me to work 18, 19. Like that wasn't that big of a deal for me, even though it was taking pieces away that I didn't realize. So that kept getting worse and worse. And eventually it got to the point where I woke up in a hotel room in New Jersey, 5:15, cold morning, crusty hotel room in New Jersey, nothing against New Jersey or hotel rooms in New Jersey. And
shout out New Jersey.
Right. And so my alarm clock goes off. I sit up, I slide to the edge of the bed. I'm lacing up my work boots. And that morning it was like there was 10 televisions on in my head at the same time. And every single one was on a different station. One is saying, and I'm sure we've all heard these in some way, one is saying you're stuck here forever. I know you want to leave. I know this sucks. I know you don't like this anymore, but nobody likes their job. So just kind of deal with it. And you're never going to make this kind of money again. You're making a boatload of money. You're never going to make this kind of money again. If you do work up the courage to leave, what are your friends going to think? All of your friends look up to you because you make so much money. What's your family going to think? Your family is super proud of you and how far you've come. But the loudest one for me was, do you really think you're going to make this podcast thing your career? Is that really going to happen? That is like such a rare thing. There's no way. And in that moment, I had that thought of, if I took my life, I would take my problems with me. I didn't see any other way out. Now, one of the things I talk about so often that I think is very under-focused on is your community. I had somebody that I trusted, that I felt safe, that I could express my truth with, Alan. I sent Alan a message and said, hey, I'm having these thoughts, I'm having these feelings, I'm having these emotions, I feel all these ways, I don't know what to do. And he said, Kev, over the last year, over the last 2 years, your awareness has changed so much, but your environments have stayed the same. I think you should change your environment. And I ended up leaving that job 3 or 4 months later and going full time into what we're doing today. But if I didn't have the podcast already, I don't know what I would have done, because I already felt like we were making an impact. I was making an impact with the podcast. It's something I loved. I knew I was passionate. I knew there was purpose behind it. And I honestly felt like I was pretty good at it, even in the beginning. So that became the mission, is look, I'm going to leave and now I'm going to be very broke. I'm going to be an entrepreneur who doesn't know anything about business. Alan and I partnered up together, and that was the beginning. But something interesting happened where when I left my job, my mental health got infinitely better, better, where I had anxiety, and there's things that happened later we can talk about, but I had some anxiety, but most of that went away. My depression really, really, really went away. I think a lot of it was I was just unaligned, and I just wasn't doing what I thought I should be doing. I was living life on somebody else's standards, not my own. So it's interesting how one small shift in the grand scheme of things can make such a huge difference.
Wow, man, that's great. I can definitely resonate with the leaving the job and hearing the opinions of other people in your head. And it's so funny because oftentimes people will be like, I just want you to be happy, but I really don't want you to take the risk that's going to make you happy. Well, I want you to be happy, but you hate that job, but you should probably just stay, right? And it's like, yeah, this is kind of contradicting feedback here. But man, that's incredible. And I think that advice that Alan gave you was so timely and so true. In instances like that, it could have been easy for him to say a whole range of things, but the change of environment was probably the one that hit the nail on the head of like, dude, just get out of there. And that might have been the exact thing you needed to pull the trigger on bouncing. Talk to me about the anxiety that you're feeling later on. Like, what are those other things that came up once the entrepreneurship road started brewing?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, which will be 99.999% of you, don't know Alan, you don't know our relationship, you don't know the podcast or the business. Alan is he's a visionary, and he's a genius, and he is the guy who's been studying self-improvement for his whole life, and he is self-improvement. And he didn't necessarily understand the amount of pressure that I was under based on the fact that I didn't know business, I didn't understand what being an entrepreneur was. My risk tolerance was extremely low. My certainty level that I required was very high. So it was a perfect storm of many, many bad things. So we were doing the podcast thing. We weren't making any money. It was just, let's podcast, let's add value, let's work on our characters, because we understand if we're going to be successful, it's going to be us. It's going to be the character. It's going to be the competence. Invest, invest, invest in yourself. Do that. But eventually we got this opportunity where Brendan Burchard was having an event in Arizona, and I had never been to a self-improvement event. I didn't even know what that was. I had no idea. I knew Brendan because we had studied him, but I didn't know what it was. Giant fear of planes. I do not like large crowds, really. So those are two things
two for
there.
Two.
So we had a mentor who lived in Florida. He said, hey, I'm going to come to the conference with you, but fly down to Florida for a couple days. We'll hang out. We'll do some masterminding. Make sure we set some intentions before we go. And it's like, all right, let's see what happens. So I'm already super nervous about going to Arizona. I'm super nervous about going to somebody's house who I don't think at that point I'd ever met. I didn't even know this person, I don't think. So we fly down to Florida, and Alan and I, the first thing we do after we land is we get our rental car and we go to the gym. That's what we do when we're on the road.
I love it.
It was awesome. Great workout. Awesome. We start getting to the end of the workout, and I remember my throat was like super tight. And it had been super tight since we got there, but I thought it was because it was super humid. It was very humid. I was like, maybe my allergies are flaring up, whatever. So we leave the gym, we get food, and we go to the hotel. And I had an anxiety attack. And I had never had an anxiety attack before, and I didn't know what it was. So I called my mom, and I said, hey, mom, I think I'm having an asthma attack, because I used to have really bad asthma. And she's like, no, I think if you were having an asthma attack, this is what would be happening. And I said, I don't know what's going on. I can't breathe. And I'm like freaking out. I can't breathe. I don't know what to do. Like, what do? I don't have health insurance. I can't go to the hospital. I don't have any money. What the hell am I supposed to do? So Alan went to CVS or Walgreens, and he got me like Claritin, Vicks Vapor Rub, anything we could think of that might fix this. Yeah. And when he came back, I was laying flat on my back in the bed, and I put Vicks Vapor Rub on my throat because I could smell it, which meant I could still breathe. And I felt good about that. So the next day we wake up and we're supposed to go to our mentors. And I was like, Alan, I can't, I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do. That day I had another panic attack. And I remember I was laying on the floor of the bathroom in the hotel. And I swear to you, Nicholas, I thought I was going to die. And I was like, well, this is it. We kind of made it. Like, we made it to Florida. That's pretty good. Brutal. It was the worst. So the next day, we're supposed to drive 5 hours down to see our buddy, Eddie Panero. He runs a YouTube channel called Your World Within. I slept the entire ride. I was freaking out. We went and interviewed him. Afterwards, we went to get burritos. I couldn't even eat because my throat felt like it was closing up. I could not even eat the burritos because we were outside. I went and sat in the car. Brutal. So we end up having to fly back to Massachusetts to get a connecting flight to Arizona. And it was basically the same in Arizona, where I couldn't focus on the event. When we went out to lunch, I couldn't breathe. It felt like I had a string that was like down my throat. It's the best way to explain it. And we end up, I survived that. We get home, and I literally laid in bed for 2 weeks. I couldn't put the covers over my head. I couldn't walk on a treadmill for like 6 months. I was pretty into kickboxing at the time. I couldn't do anything with that. Working out was a struggle. It was brutal. So I basically had to teach myself, after learning that this is anxiety, I had to teach myself, okay, it's so much of this is in your head. It's not that big of a deal. And I had to continue doing that. And yeah, it was brutal, man. It was brutal. It was the worst. It was one of the worst experiences of my life. And I have so much understanding now and so much yeah, just understanding of people who really deal with that day in and day out. I never understood what anxiety was. It didn't make any sense. I didn't understand how you could feel that way. But that was one of the hardest, most challenging times of my life because I didn't know what was wrong across the country and I don't have any money. So it's not like I can just go to the doctors.
Oh my goodness. That sounds exactly as described. Absolutely brutal.
It was brutal.
Somebody said something to me recently that I think is very true about going through hardship and coming out on the other side is what allows you to resonate with people that are about to go through the hardship or in that hardship. There's no better way to be able to communicate with somebody or who's going through something than you already having gone through that thing. So I'm happy to hear it has a purpose because you're working with people now and it's full circle. But I'm curious, what did you end up finding? Where did it stem from? Like, how did you troubleshoot it down to the root and kind of begin the retraining? What was your process like?
I think I just started with Google and I just started, right?
WebMD.
WebMD, you are dying. Oh, no. I think I probably just Googled it and because I like to research and I like to know a deeper understanding, right? Awareness. I think I probably researched it and just got to the point where I was like, oh, okay, interesting. When I do blank, I feel a certain type of way. Okay, what happens if I don't do that? And I just kept digging and I kept digging and I kept digging. This is what Alan and I got to. And this was later. This was like a year and a half. I don't even know. Maybe a year and a half, 2 years later. There's your comfort zone. The next ring is your learning zone. And the further most out ring is your anxiety zone. I lived in my anxiety zone for that entire time. I quite literally gave myself anxiety based on the fact that I was living so far outside of my comfort zone. That's what caused it. I am convinced of that. And I didn't understand how far outside of my comfort zone I was at the time because Alan wasn't that far outside of his. I didn't realize the difference between Alan and I in terms of our competence, in terms of the ability to handle pressure, certainty, all that. That's what did it for me, was being so far outside of my comfort zone, being so broke, not knowing how I was going to make money, being single and miserable, all the traveling that I was fronting on credit cards, all of that uncertainty, all of that stuff. That's what caused it. I am convinced of it. And when I started to connect those dots, it allowed me to understand, oh, okay. So in theory, that should happen less as I level up. And now it's at the point where I occasionally get anxiety, but it's not like that. My throat gets a little tight and I know, oh, okay, cool.
What's going on?
Something's going on. I'm overwhelmed. It's some sort of environmental trigger. I haven't slept enough. My stress is super high, but now at least I know how to troubleshoot it. Yeah.
That's a huge difference maker too, of like being aware of your body as well. Cause from my personal experience, I didn't have any really emotional intelligence of myself or even like emotional awareness until like maybe a year ago. And I didn't really consider how connected my body was to emotions, right? Like my body is giving constant feedback about how I'm feeling. And if I don't know how I'm feeling, I should check in with my physical body. So like you're saying, like when your throat tenses up, you know, like this thing is happening. I'm trying to think of a specific example. I think I unconsciously clench my teeth when I'm like frustrated or uncomfortable. And I think before I'd just be like, man, something, I'm really clenching my teeth. I have no idea why. But then I'd be like, now I can realize some of these things are like just cues for us to better manage and live our lives.
It's like that with everything, right? Like for a long time, my left knee hurt. And I was like, oh, my left knee hurts. And then I started looking up videos for physical therapy and exercise science. My right ankle is tight. It throws off my hips. It throws off my right knee, which throws off my left knee. Oftentimes we're looking at symptoms, but the symptom isn't necessarily the cause, which is an interesting thing. And to your point, it's kind of the same. It's connected.
I love that. The compensating thing is like my knee hurts, but it's really my ankle is the problem.
You never get there.
It's so true for everything.
Yeah, you never get there because it doesn't make any sense. But that's the awareness, right? That's why you go to somebody who understands, well, maybe it's not your knee. I mean, your knee is connected to this bone, what's connected to this. And awareness, that's why I think it's such a superpower. If my car breaks, my awareness is not high enough to fix it. I have to go to somebody whose awareness is high enough to fix it. But it gets dangerous. Their awareness is so high that they understand that I have a low level of awareness. That's how you get ripped off. It's a fine line. But awareness really is a superpower, and it's a strength. It's a strength or a weakness, depending on if you have it or not.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Always striving for more self-awareness. In one of your episodes, this is with Evan Carmichael, you stated that your number one core value is resilience. And I'm curious, I mean, your whole story is resilience centered. And I'm curious as to why it's so important to you. And maybe even talk about like when you became aware that resilience was your thing, your ability to say no to excuses and keep moving forward.
It's important to me because, and again, a lot of this is in reflection, I was never the biggest. I'm 5'4". I'm strong and I have muscle. But if you were standing next to me, I'm not a physically imposing human being compared to most. I never was the strongest or the biggest. I mean, I was close to the strongest. But what I lacked in talent, what I lacked in skill, what I lacked in awareness or intelligence, I could always make up for in just dealing with pain. I just think of even in my baseball career, I was a pretty good baseball player. I made the All-Star team. I was in the papers and all that. But it was because I was reckless. I would dive over the catcher. I would dive for the ball. I would do whatever. I didn't care. As long as I made the catch, it didn't matter. But even earlier, when I was younger, Nicholas, I wanted to be a professional wrestler. It was the WWF then. And my cousin beat me with a metal chair. He used to hit me over the head with a metal chair. And he threw me into a thorn bush and he used to beat me with a wiffle ball bat. And as bad as that sounds, I think there was a part of me that was like, whatever. I can take it. It's not that.
This is getting me to my dream right here.
It's not that big of a deal. I resonated with stuntmen. I resonated with people who could handle a beating. I just valued that. I've always valued that. And then if you look at what I said before, my job took a lot. I mean, I remember one time we were working in an attic that was probably like 120 degrees, 2 hours from the office. My boss called us and said, hey, will you guys go to New York tonight? Which is like 6 hours. And we were like, well, we don't have our clothes. He said, well, work the rest of the day. If you want to do it, work the rest of the day, drive back to the office, and then drive to New York tonight. So I worked an 8-hour day. I commuted for 4 hours just to get to the first job site. And then we drove another 6 hours to get to the hotel. And like we're checking in at 1 or 2 in the morning and then getting up at 5 to work. Like, whatever. I don't care. There's money there. There's money there. So yeah, I think for me, it's an unfair advantage that I don't have elsewhere. And I believe the person who lasts the longest ultimately wins. I mean, we recorded episode 1,152 yesterday. The only reason we've gotten that far is because we've just tried to stay afloat. Just stay alive, get to tomorrow. There's no way we'd be there if when times got hard, we said, I just don't feel like it today. I'd rather do this. I'd rather do that. No, I want to win. I really, really, really want to win. And that's part of my identity at this point. It's part of my identity. And in that episode, Evan calls me out and literally said, well, Kev, things aren't as hard as you think they are. I mean, if resilience is your thing, you got to move on to something harder. Your life's too easy then. And it's like, all right, Evan, I see what you're doing. Come on, take it easy. So
hey, take it easy.
And it got to the point, like I have never quit tattooed on my arm. So that's why I'm hashtag never quit kid. I want to be that. I want to be that because I understand that not everybody has hyperintelligence or is world-class at something. Most people aren't world-class at something when they start, but it doesn't require any amount of money for you to show up consistently and just try to grin and bear what you can. Now, obviously, don't go too far. Don't go into the anxiety zone and live there like I did, but now that allows me to work 16-hour days consistently, and it's not that hard compared to a lot of the other stuff I've done.
I'm curious your opinion on like suffering and success. Is it, it's a necessary evil? It has to happen. Is success possible without suffering?
My favorite quote for this is the level of suffering, the level of challenge, the level of truth is directly connected to the level of your goals. So if you want to change the world, you will suffer. I don't know if there's any way not to do it. I don't believe there is any way not to do it. And a good analogy, if you want to play beer league softball, not that hard, right? Go pick up a bat, find 7 friends and 8 friends, whatever, how many people play on a baseball team, and go do it. If you want to be the best baseball player in the world, you're going to have to sacrifice more. You're going to have to struggle for longer. You're going to have to suffer more. you're going to have to do things differently. So I think it depends on your goals. And I think everything does, right? If I just want to be a somewhat successful podcaster, that's it. We don't have to do anything else. Like, we're going to be fine. But we never would have got to where we are if we didn't want to be the best podcasters we could be. And that's the interesting paradox. So the journey is dictated by the goal. It all depends. Your level of suffering, your level of resistance is going to be directly correlated to the level of result that you want to achieve in the end.
Hi friends, this is Nicholas Attali, and every Friday at 6 a.m. I bring you a delicious snack of an episode to help you live a more fulfilling life and level up your business. If you're tuning in right now, consider this your sign to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave a review, screenshot it, share it to your Instagram story, tagging me at Nicholas Attali so I can reshare it. Then send this episode to two of your friends that you know would enjoy it. All right, back to the episode. Wow, that is some food for thought right there, Kevin. That's some really good stuff, especially for those with big goals too. I've fallen in this boat before where I've made a super big goal and just kind of been moseyed about it, right? Mosey on along. And it's like, there needs to be more behind this. And especially, I think it comes to your why, your purpose behind things. I've heard you say this analogy and I loved it. It was, if there's a $20 bill in a burning building, you're not going to run in. But if your daughter's in that burning building, you are going to run in. And I think that translates to exactly what you're saying. Like, is your purpose aligned with what you're doing? And if it is, are you going to go all in on it?
You need necessity. I mean, there has to be some sort of necessity. I have this at my desk, $100 bill. I wasn't going to the gym as consistently as I wanted to go. I was letting myself down, hitting snooze. I'm too tired. It's too much going on. I have 18 meetings. Too much. So it got to the point where I said, all right, what can I do about this? I gave my wife this $100 bill. I took it from our safe, so it's our money, gave it to her. And I said, if I do not go to the gym 5 days in a row this week, I want you to rip this $100 bill up in front of me. And she started with, no, I will not do that. And I said, I understand totally. I promise I won't let you down. I won't let you down. I won't let us down. I promise I won't. I promise. And she said, okay, I'll do it. I went to the gym 5 times in a row, crushed it. Okay.
Nice.
End of the week, start a new week. I've missed 2 times this week because I didn't give her back the money. I'm telling you, the thing that we're so afraid of is what we should probably use to hold ourselves accountable. I don't want to let my wife down. It's not even about the money, really. It's about me breaking a promise to my wife. The $100, like, it's not the end of the world, right? For you, it might be a $5 bill. It might not be the end of the world. I mean, that's a coffee. But letting yourself down, letting somebody else down, you have to have some sort of accountability. And here's another quote. The discomfort of not accomplishing something must be greater than the discomfort of accomplishing it. AKA, me failing with my wife must be harder than me going to the gym every day. Going to the gym's not that hard. It's not that much of a challenge. Letting her down is 10 out of 10. Don't want to do it. Can't do it. So the fear of me failing is way greater than the discomfort of me doing the things required for success. And I think that's just the human condition. Just the human condition in a nutshell.
Raise our stakes. That's what we got to do. Yeah. Raise the stakes so we actually can be propelled into action. From personal experience, I think times where I've been, I don't want to use the word desperate, but I'll say back up against the wall, have been the times where I have succeeded the most. Because like you're saying, there's a necessity and there's more willpower behind things. If there's nothing at stake, nothing's going to happen. But if there's a lot at stake, things are going to get done. That's guaranteed.
100%.
All right. Here's what I got for you. As a kid, you used to punch CD cases until the plastic shattered and you wanted to see how much your knuckles would bleed. Yep. And I'm going to translate this into your 5 to thrive. So tell me about the 5 to thrive confidence meter you and Alan have coined. Where you lie on that meter today and where you were on that meter throughout your childhood, maybe even specifically when you were punching CD cases.
Yeah. So Alan is the most confident human I've ever met in my entire life. He believes anything is possible for him. And honestly, most things are, because that's just who he is. I was unreasonably insecure. I had no self-belief, very low self-worth. I didn't believe I could be successful. I didn't believe I deserved a mentor. I just didn't believe in myself, where Alan at times didn't think he needed a mentor because he was so good. The drive to five is you figuring out what is your unique balance of that and where should you go. Alan needed humility. He needed to get his butt kicked in life, not physically, because that would bring him down where he's confident but humble. He understands that he knows a lot, but he doesn't know everything. I needed to stack some wins up so I could actually build up my confidence and get to the point where, oh, it's really nice here. It's nice to feel like I'm capable. It's nice to feel like I have a high level of self-belief, at least a level of belief that will propel me forward. When I was a young kid, I was angry. A lot of it was because I didn't believe in myself. I had very low self-worth. And I think it stemmed from the fact that when I was a kid, my dad left. And I think I internalized that as, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not a good enough son. All the things. My dad left because of me. And I was angry. I was a very, very angry kid. And I liked it. I liked to punch things and watch my knuckles change colors and shapes. I liked that. I think for me, I was very low on the drive to five. I started at a place of just very little self-belief. I assumed that everything I had in life was based on luck. I was a good baseball player because I was lucky 40% of the time. Not good, I was lucky. I assumed every relationship I had that was with somebody beautiful was because I was lucky. I assumed that I made all that money because I was lucky. I didn't connect that to work ethic. That was the through line of my life. So as a child, I was definitely very low on the drive to five, low self-belief, low self-worth. Nobody would ever want to help me. I don't deserve success. It's not possible for me. Yeah, that's really where I started my life.
Wow. Talk to me about your dad too, and we'll come back to it. I believe you re-met your father when you were 27. Yeah. And what you've done is you've done an exceptional job of setting boundaries right out of the gate. What was it like re-meeting your pops, and how did you set those expectations and boundaries?
Yeah, it was brutal. I was sitting on the couch one day. I lived by myself, 27, going through Facebook messages. And I,
here we go.
Right. And I found, and who knows why, it probably wasn't a positive reason. And I found the folder of messages, requests from people that you're not friends with. And I said, oh, I've never seen this before. I don't know what this is all about. I opened up the folder and I saw a message and it said, hey, Kev, I'm blank. I'm your father's girlfriend. And I remember I threw my phone on the floor and I said, no. We are not doing this today. It's the weekend. No. But I picked up my phone and I opened the message and it said, hey, Kev, I'm blank. I'm your father's girlfriend. He wanted me to reach out to you and let you know that he's very proud of what you're doing. He's seen you on Facebook. And if you ever want the opportunity to meet, that's something he would like very much. If you're interested, let me know. And
wow.
When I saw this, Nicholas, this message was like a year old, I think. At least a year old, maybe even two. And I remember I just started crying. I was bawling my eyes out because for most of my life, I had considered myself somebody who didn't have a dad. I don't have a dad. I don't care if my dad's alive. I don't care if he's dead. Doesn't matter. I'm never going to see him. But in that moment, it's very much, oh, okay, now this is a possibility that I might actually have to face this thing that I've been pushing away for so long. So I messaged one of my friends and I told her what was going on. I said, yeah, I just got a message from my dad. And she said, are you going to go see him? And I said, yeah, I think I have to. And she said, do you want me to come with you? And I said, no, I have to do this alone. I don't know why. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm terrified, but I do think this is something that's going to help me close doors that I didn't even realize were open. So I messaged his girlfriend back and I said, yeah, let's do it. This is when I'm available. I think this will probably be the best place. I think it's in between where we live based on the information you've given me. Let's do it. So I think it was a weekend. I drive down 45 minutes to what's in between both of us. It's a diner. And I remember I park at the diner and I'm like, all right, we got this. We're going to do this. We're brave. We got this. Cool. Go in, sit down. And I have this interesting moment, Nicholas, where I said, I don't even know how I'm going to know when he gets here. I don't know what he looks like. I have no idea what this man looks
right.
like.
Wow. Yeah,
so
wow.
That I probably should have done a little bit of research, but I'm sitting in a booth and it's facing one of the windows. And I saw a man walk by and I said, yep, that's him. Don't know how I knew. I hadn't seen a picture of him. And I do not remember. I saw him when I was young, like a very, very young boy, but like it was me visiting him once or twice. He was not in my life. So he comes in, he sits down, and I remember it was just like, this is the most awkward experience of my entire life. But at one point he opened up and he started crying and we were just having a conversation, as weird of a conversation as you can imagine from somebody who's supposed to be father and son, but neither of them feel that way. And it got to the point where it was good. It was a good conversation. We were both positive. I didn't want to beat my dad up and make him feel bad. But this is the interesting that happened for me. The interesting thing that happened. I realized in that moment that this is just a man who has never worked on himself, who has a very low level of self-awareness, who probably had a very low level of ownership, and honestly, has a very low level of self-improvement. And I don't mean that with any negativity. It allowed me to empathize with the fact that, look, when he went through the experience that he went through of having me, he probably didn't know what the hell he was doing. He probably had no clue what he was doing. Circumstantially, he probably had no idea what was going on in his life. It's probably not such a bad thing that he wasn't in my life. And I went home that night. I think he texted me, and we made plans to get lunch, I think. And I went down to his house a couple weeks later, and we hung out, and it was good. It was a good experience. I mean, it was kind of like, I know you're supposed to be my dad, but I don't know if that can actually be this way in this. So let's just be friends. Let's just act like we're friends and we'll talk like that. But it was hard because my dad could never really understand where I am in life. I don't think most people can. As a podcaster, you understand what it's like to do 7 episodes a week. And, you know, like there's context there. I had this moment where it was like, I'm never going to be able to be what my dad wants me to be. I'm not the type of person you can just call on a Tuesday. Like I don't even know where my phone is. I'm not going to answer my phone. I'm working. I'm trying to change the world. That's what I'm doing. So I let it go and just said, look, I cannot facilitate and maintain this relationship. I know that. The expectations are too off. You can't just come into my life and expect me to treat this relationship as a level 10 out of 10 when it's just never going to be. I feel really good about the fact that I opened the door. I feel like that healed so much of me. I really, really, really do. And I decided that I just don't want to have that relationship. But I think it was a decision that was made based on awareness and trying to play it out into the future instead of just anger. It's not because I don't want my dad to know me. I just don't think I'm capable of maintaining the relationship the way that the expectations would say.
Man, I can relate to this. My dad has been pretty absent for the majority of my life. And I think a question that comes up to me is like similar to what you're talking about, like anger, but mainly it's like, do you resent him? Do you have resentment toward him? And it's like, I don't. What good is that for me to hold on to something that he more like didn't do? But it's just like you forgive these people. And I think the weird part, like you're saying, is like they don't know you. You talk to them and you're like, I don't recognize you, right? Like you're not a recognizable figure in my life. So I can't really, exactly what you're saying, like the work ethic or like what it takes to put things together. Some things you can't start from zero this late in the game. And that's okay. It's not like I'm holding anything against them. Just sometimes it's how it is.
It's hard. The reason I want to talk about it is because I know there's a lot of people out there that might have their own unique experience with that. For me, meeting my dad was one of the best things ever because it allowed me to make an informed decision based on something empowering, not I hate this man. Like, I don't hate my dad. I don't want him to be that person in my life. I don't have any ill will. I feel bad. Like, that's where it started from. He would text me and I wouldn't text him back for a couple days. And it's like, honestly, Dad, that's actually really good. Like the fact that I texted you back in 2 days.
I'm putting in an effort.
Right. Like yeah. That, a lot of people, that's not how it works for me because most people don't text me. It's like, that's not how this is set up. So yeah. And honestly, you could, if you're out there, you can consider that some sort of cop out. Like, you could have done the work to do it. And that's fair. I definitely could have. It wasn't aligned for me to do it.
Did you see any qualities of yourself that came from your dad? I definitely have some from mine. Even if I spent no time around you, I'm like, I know I got this trait from you.
No, not really. A lot of like the physical, like my dad was a very, very strong person. He was a bodybuilder. So I think that's where I got that from. But other than that, no, because I've changed so much. I'm not, if you talked, I mean, Nicholas, you wouldn't talk to me 6 years ago, there'd be no point. But I've changed more in the last 5 years than I did in the previous 28. So it's almost like I'm not even the same person I was. There's no way we could be similar. There's too much has changed for me.
That's good because my next question is about how you've changed. So since starting the podcast, you've gone from 0 episodes to now recording, like you said, over 1,100. You got over 600K listens, pulling in. This is a six-figure show. What's the biggest change that you've seen happen to yourself? And what are the results of that? Because basically what you're saying is like how the output has been based on what has internally changed, which I think is a big misconception people have, is just like, if I chase the money, my whole life will be better. If I chase these things, but it's like, if you work on yourself, outputs will happen. So what's the biggest change you've seen in yourself in the past couple of years?
I would say confidence, probably. I think, again, it's very easy when you're being interviewed to come off as a very confident human being, but I wasn't always the way I am today. That's been the biggest thing. It's confidence. The fact that I feel like if you put me in a room with somebody, I can probably add value. That wasn't me 5 years ago. That's not how I felt. That's a big one. The other thing too is I try to take more responsibility today than I ever have. If something happens with a podcast, that's my fault. It just is. It's my baby. I'm the one that's in charge of all that stuff. You know, I think as your confidence raises, it's important to make sure that your ownership raises too, because that's the humbling part. A lot of people lose sight of, I'm confident, but I'm not humble. I get humbled daily. Every single day, I'm messing something up. I'm getting some sort of hard truth, whether it's from my business partner, from the team, from what we're tracking, we have a bad day financially, whatever. It's important to make sure that as your confidence raises, your ownership does too, because you have to hold yourself accountable. So yeah, the biggest thing that shifted for me is I actually am a confident human being now, which I never thought I'd be able to say. Still have my moments. I still have like social anxiety around certain things, believe it or not. But that, and then the fact that I am capable and willing to take ownership, even when it's super difficult, I think that's a very important thing that I didn't understand how important it would be or how valuable it would be. Yeah.
If you don't take responsibility for it, you're not giving yourself the power to change it. 100%. Like, if this isn't my problem, I'm not going to do anything 100%. About it. Something that I love that you've done, and you touched on this earlier, is reverse engineering regret so you can be propelled into action. And I also want to tackle, I'm getting a little 2-for-1 here. I want to know what systems you have in place to track the important self-development metrics. I know for one of them, at a certain time in your life, you were tracking the number of fears you tackled. What's the system you got in place to track those?
Yeah, so the reverse engineering regret was for Alan. Alan, it got to the point where we knew Alan needed more feedback than he was getting because he was losing sight of a lot of things. He just was losing sight because we were quote unquote winning. Everything was going well. And he introduced me to a book called The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying by Bronnie Ware. And we were talking about that book. And I said, well, you know, it'll be really good for you and really humbling is if every day you reverse engineered regret, what are the things you did today that you regretted? And he's like, wow, that's really awesome. I'm going to start doing that. Problem is, he ran that system for too long and it ended up getting to the point where he started feeling very bad about himself. So you have to you have to be very, very, very careful about that. But again, just as an example, Alan and I did a weight loss challenge. I don't know if we talked about this in front of the scenes, behind the scenes, but we did a 10-week, 10-pound challenge. Talking about accountability, if one of us doesn't hit it, that person doesn't get to come on the podcast. And that person has to miss an episode. And we've never missed.
That's big.
We've never missed together. Yeah. So we both ended up accomplishing it. But Alan, 2 or 3 days before, said, hey man, Sunday, I'm going to run a marathon. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
What do you mean? And he's like, I need to lose this weight, man. I'm going to run a marathon. So no training, zero training. So he proceeded to Sunday, wake up, go to the track, and then run a marathon. He ended up
a track.
Yeah. Outside.
The circles.
Outside, yeah.
You did a circle for 26.
Yeah.
Miles. Oh my
gosh. And it was
gosh.
Like 90, okay, okay, okay. 95 degree Massachusetts day, brutal, but he didn't make it. He said, I got cocky after the half marathon. He's like, this is fine. And he's like, I didn't realize it was going to get exponentially harder as I went. He came back very humble, but he needs that. That's really good for Alan because he's somebody who believes anything is possible. Great. That's great for him. It doesn't hurt his self-belief. It makes him think more accurately. So you can reverse engineer regret. You just have to be very careful because it depends on, do you tie your outcomes to your self-worth? If so, you got to be very careful. Is it going to hurt your short-term and long-term belief if you're focusing on the losses? I think most humans should focus on the wins first. And then you can say, well, this is 1% win, 1% improvement. I think that's a good way to do it. The way we do it now is, number one, we have an app where we track our habits, but it's mostly we track the habits that we do every single day in a spreadsheet. So I have 26 habits that I track every single day, everything from fitness, weighing myself, tracking the finances, the gratitude game with my wife. Every night before we go to bed, we say one thing that we're grateful for about each other. So it started from a place of, okay, let's do one under health, one under wealth, one under love. So health, weigh yourself every day. Wealth, track your finances. Love, gratitude game. And then it obviously has grown and grown, but we try to think, okay, what are the most important things that we should be doing every day for holistic wellness, holistic success? And then we throw those in our spreadsheet. It calculates your percentage at the end of the day, 1% win, 1% improvement. And I basically live my life in a spreadsheet now, which it seems terrible, but one of the things I believe that humans need is clarity. There is never in the last however many years, there has not been a day when I've woken up and said, I don't know what I should do today. It doesn't happen. I just look at the list. It tells me you should post on social media. You should track the finances. You should learn for 30 minutes every single day. My excuse can't be, I don't know what to do. My excuse is I just didn't do it. That's a very good place to be. So yeah, we live our lives in spreadsheets. Again, I understand that's not for everybody, but I do believe if we were all a little bit more uniform in the way we did our habits and we focused on our habits and we saw the result and the outcome every day, 75%, I could do a little bit better tomorrow. I think that's really, really, it's really, really important to get that feedback daily because you'll feel good about yourself or it gives you an opportunity to grow.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know if I'm your target audience or what, because you're talking to the right guy. I'm like, you have a spreadsheet to track this? This is amazing. I can get feedback for myself every day. With the percentage too, yep. That's incredible. What's the app you're using as well? You're like, you're doubling down. You got two of them going on.
We have an app. We actually made an app. It's called Optimal. Yeah, because
Kevin,
most people don't want to track in a spreadsheet. Understandable, right? Like you want to track from your cell phone. You want it to be easy. You don't have to worry about the algorithm and making the percentage. So that's something that is in, I think we've probably had it for like 6 months. It's something very, very new, but that's something that we're going to run forever too.
That's great. Sheesh. Wow. I'm looking forward to checking that out. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I got a question in regards to some more expectations. You know, we lead our lives with expectations here. In regards to your success, what expectations do you have for yourself?
I would say the number one expectation is regardless of how successful I am, I never lose sight of what it was like not to be. I don't ever want to be that guy. I do not want to be that guy. I don't like that person. That's not the type of person I want to be. So my expectations are no matter how successful I am, I don't ever use that to treat somebody in a different way. I don't want to do that. I really want a nice, nice, nice car. So when I go through the drive-through, it actually helps people recondition nice car, nice person. That's what I want. I understand at a deep level that the nicer the things you have are, if you're a good human being, that actually magnifies your impact. Because a lot of people have negative associations with wealth or nice things. I want to recondition that. And that's something I'm very, very, very focused on. So yeah, I don't ever want to let the success get to my head. And I don't want it to change any of my character. Because I understand at the end of the day, that's the only reason we are here. And we could lose it all tomorrow. I mean, this could all be gone tomorrow. So I don't want that to happen.
I think I've read in one of your captions, you said something along the lines, I'm 100% going to botch it, so please bear with me here. Yeah. Don't get to a place in your career where your character can't keep up, those lines.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the perfect way of framing things. It's like, you should be that guy, quote unquote, that guy, like the person with integrity, the person that is going to give a helping hand, the person that's going to be the person that's approachable. Because I think about that too. Like there's successful people that you know will chew you out if you come up to them at the wrong time. And there's successful people that are very gracious and kind and caring and just give you that one word of encouragement that they could give you at that time and you hold on to it more.
Just be a good human. I had somebody the other day, I was supposed to be on a podcast and this person sent me an email. I don't know if it was that day. I don't remember when it was, but they said, hey, I can't make the interview today because I have something going on in my family. We're moving my father into or out of the nursing home. And oh, wow. I said, you're good. Don't worry. Like, no stress. You're good. No stress at all. I'm sending you all the love to your family. I hope everything works out. Let me know if I can help. And this person messaged me back, and this is why it's so important. They said, now I can't wait to interview you even more than I was excited for originally. It's like, I would hope that you would treat me the same if I was going through something. Whatever. Does that mess my day up a little bit? Probably not that much. Nothing worth saying, yeah. Hey, you know, it's,
come on,
it's important.
Why are you helping your dad?
Right.
Why'd you do that?
It's important to be a good human being. I think it is. But you got to be careful, right? Because some people take advantage of that too. So there is that fine line. I did something recently that was hard for me because it feels very uncomfortable. But if you're 5 minutes late to an interview or a coaching call with me, I go. And then I just send an email and say, hey, unfortunately, I was waiting for 5 minutes. I have to move on to my next task. I'm happy to reschedule 100%, but I can't wait because I want to make sure that I'm being a kind human, but I'm not letting people walk all over me. The boundaries, you said that word earlier.
I love that.
Your boundaries have to be accurate for what you're doing.
And it sets an expectation for how people can treat you, which I think is super important. I'm going to try to sneak in a quick one before the final one. All right. I've heard on the podcast, our purpose can be derived from our biggest pain points, and your goal in life is to be the person you needed when you were at your lowest point. What is step one for someone who is lost, doesn't have any clarity, and lacks purpose?
I would say ask yourself a couple questions. Number one, what pisses you off more than anything? Number two, what is something that you think about every single day that you don't hear enough people, quote unquote, enough people talking about? What would I find you talking about on a Friday night with your friends if nobody else was around? Those are some clarity questions where you can say, like, I'd be talking about, the environment and how I wish it was treated better. It's like, okay, that's a sign. What pisses you off? I go to the beach and there's just always litter. Okay, that's a sign, right? What is something that's not talked about enough? And I think, you know, the planet is being talked about more than ever, which is great. But you know why it is? Because there's a bunch of people who said it's not being talked about enough. That's why it is. So those are a couple clarity questions. I think it's you reflect into your past and think to yourself, what are some of the pain points that I've overcome? And what are the things that I want to help other people avoid? I really do believe that for many of us, we go out and we look for our purpose. We look for our passion. When in reality, it might have already happened to us. We might have already been doing it. We just didn't see the vehicle yet. And it really landed for me when I looked back. Somebody asked me that question. And I looked back and I said, well, I used to drive a truck. And when I drove a truck, I would drive for 6-8 hours a day. I'd listen to the radio all day and say, imagine if you could just talk into the microphone for a living. That'd be pretty cool. Cool. I remember when I was in high school, I bought a microphone and I used to rap into the microphone. So I've been playing with microphones for a long time. All right, that's interesting. I remember that when I was on the road, I didn't really have time for a relationship because I was never home. So at times I would have like friends with benefits. One of these friends with benefits, after we kind of broke up our situationship, she had a relationship, a very serious relationship. And she used to message me for advice. She literally would message me and say, hey, I know you study relationships. What do you think this means? And I would give her just as a friend. I don't want anything else. Like that's gone. This is what I would do. And she was very successful in her relationship. Coaching. Interesting. Okay. I've always wanted to help. I just didn't know how. That's why when podcasting was quote unquote revealed to me, I saw a sustainable, unique vehicle. So I think a lot of us know we want to impact a certain type of person in a certain type of way. We just don't know what the vehicle is. A lot of people get stuck here. I want to make the world a better place by saving the environment, especially the rivers in cities. But how do I make money doing it? And that's where it stops. Like, I can never do that. I can't make any money. So I think you got to reflect and you got to sit with the fact that it's hard to go out and search for your purpose. It's for most of us, I think it's already happened. And then the other question too that you can ask is, and this is a fine line, but if you could do anything. So if I gave you $1 billion and you could do anything in the service of humanity, what would it be? And drinking margaritas on the beach does not count as service to humanity. What would it be? Because if you're willing to do it for free, there's a pretty high likelihood that it's something that you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, that's great. Those are great questions to be reflecting on. If you're listening to this right now, ask yourself those questions. Kevin, we are moving into the final question of the podcast. We've made it. But before we do, I want to acknowledge you for all that you're doing. You are an inspiring person. Listening to your guys' podcast gets me fired up. You guys are dropping wisdom bombs left and right. And I think your ability to get vulnerable and share your story, there's so much strength in that. And I think people really resonate and are able to see themselves in your shoes and be able to make a difference and lasting change. Plus, you're helping people in the coaching world like change their mindset. And I think that's huge too. It's like exactly what we talked about, changing from within so you can have the life that you want. And I love that.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. The final question of the podcast is, what's it mean to live a fulfilling life?
To me, it is maximizing my own potential so I can impact more people. And then through the impact, I can raise my own lifestyle standard. And I believe that is fulfillment. When you get really, really good at something, so if you think of it, you have mastery, get really good. Impact as many people as humanly possible, and then profitability. From the impact you have, there's an exchange of energy and value for money. That's how a successful business should be run. I think that's how a successful life should be run as well. Yeah, fulfillment to me and a fulfilling life is this. It's me getting to add value every day. But I can only give value based on the level of self-awareness I have, self-competence, personal development. So get really good, get really smart, get really competent, be very, very valuable, be really valuable, and then add that value to as many human beings as possible, as consistently as humanly possible. And then on the back end, you get paid in proportion to the impact that you have on the world. And it becomes this wonderful circle of life where the better you get, the more people you can help, the more money you make, and that just keeps going and going. And that's how you change the world. That's how you change the world. So that is what it is to me. It's what I'm doing now. I'm in this chair for the majority of the day, but I'm impacting. I'm impacting people, and then I get to spend time with my wife at night, and we do, you know, our fun, unique activities on the weekend, and that's it in a nutshell.
Man, that's awesome. Bringing value to the people. I love
always,
it.
Always. Value wins.
That's right. Kevin, where can people connect with you on the internet? How can they say hello?
I always send people to the podcast, Next Level University, all the podcast platforms, YouTube. And the best social media platform for me is Instagram. So my handle is @neverquitkid. Send me a message, questions, comments, podcast questions, whatever. I'm happy to answer. I don't want your money. I'm not that type of person that's like, oh, I'm not going to answer your messages if you don't give me money. If you ask me a million questions, maybe I'll say, look, we should probably hop on a call. But 9 times out of 10, that's not what happens.
Yeah, love it. All those links will be in the show notes. Say hi to Kevin. Say what's up. Send him your Cash App so you know, he can charge you right away. Just kidding. Kevin, thanks for being on the show.
Of course, Nicholas. This was wonderful. I appreciate you, my friend.
Absolutely.
Bye.
That was the episode. You just listened to it. Kevin Palmieri dropping knowledge bombs. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and share this episode with a friend you admire most. It'll take 5 seconds and is a wonderful use of your screen time. The real reason you're still here. You want to know the answer to the riddle of the week. Where do fruits go on vacation? Paris. Paris. I bet Rick Ross would like to go there, because all he does is eat pears nowadays. Thank you for tuning in. See you next Friday at 6 a.m. Be kind, be strong, be disciplined. Bye!